I will kill you with my germs. Germs.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are live at Omega Fall 2013. We talk to our friend the captain, who's a geography professor. We talk about a bunch of stuff, mostly geography.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my husband and co-host, Nick Glover.
Wow.
I am your husband and co-host.
No.
Finally.
Nick.
You are single now.
Nick Glover.
Yeah, you're... Nope.
And Tim Wick.
I am not her husband and co-host.
No. God damn it. And it's because I usually don't start with Nick, and then I try to decide to switch it up.
Excuses.
Place it by my own petard.
Dead to me.
We're here with our friend, the captain, today. Hello, Captain.
Aye, aye.
All right, and Captain, you are a geography teacher.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about doing that. We're here at OmegaCon, by the way, and that's why we have the captain here.
We're recording live. We have an audience.
Yeah.
We're always recording live, though. I mean,
shut up.
We're recording dead. Yes, I'm the captain. I teach geography. The great thing about geography is geography involves the study of spatial relationships between things that exist in space. So it's literally everything.
Mm.
And that's part of the reason I like it so much. So I teach a variety of different classes. I've taught map making, which obviously involves where places are.
Cartography.
We call it GIS now because cartography was more when you're using your hands.
What does GIS stand for?
Geographic Information Systems.
Nah.
Yeah, it's an interesting field. A lot of people will take classes on map making, just kind of help them out with various projects at work and whatnot.
Sure.
Other classes I teach, I have a class on urban geography, which is just about cities. Studying cities is basically the same thing as studying civilization.
Yeah.
How did people come together in different places and for what reasons? And in fact, I often use science fiction conventions as a way for students to understand how people come together. Just because people like to kind of talk about things that they're interested in and like to do that with other people.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you more details about that if you want later. I also teach physical geography, which is everything about the physical world. How do mountains come about, volcanoes, evolution, the oceans.
Wait, you teach evolution in a geography class?
I know, it's crazy, but evolution actually affected...
I'm sure patterns and movements and migrations and...
Where things are and why things are the way they are, wherever they are.
In biology, they talk about islands being really important in evolution.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got an isolated valley and you've got a population of, say, wombats that makes it into this isolated valley, the number of generations it's going to take for that population of wombats to become evolutionarily unable to breed with the other species of wombats outside of that valley. So even though it's not a literal island, it's something that isolates a member of a certain species from the other members of that species and then results in an evolutionary change.
Yeah.
Sure. Divergence.
Yeah. And Captain, would you say you're an atheist, agnostic, just in general theist? Like how do you self-identify?
You know, it depends, I guess, as far as you guys would be concerned, I'd consider myself an atheist. Sometimes I describe myself as a humanist because I believe, you know, more so than just there's not a God. I understand, as far as I understand humanism, it's about humanity kind of self-actualizing and trying to kind of be the best that it can be. And I'm a strong believer in that.
You don't believe in God, but you believe in people. And that's the thing that's
I believe in human potential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, that's part of why I'm an educator, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
Oh, and back to what you're talking about, new islands. Yes, geographers very specifically do lots of studies about a place where, let's say there's a new volcano, there's a big landslide, something that has kind of wiped a slate clean.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at, well, what are the pioneer species and how do they change the takeover? And what are all the different, you know, what are all the creatures that come in and what do they do? And then how are their actual genomes changed through time? And
so like Mount St. Helens after the eruption.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know there's a lot of research going on there because it's something that we really have eyes on, that we could see Mount St. Helens wipe out all the species and then we can watch very closely the repopulation of
some species. Some species have that is a part of their life cycle. Like, is it jack pines after forest fires?
Oh yeah, forest fires definitely.
There's some trees that only grow after a forest fire comes through and clears out everything. The heat like gets their pine cones going, that's what helps restart the forest growth.
Either giant redwoods or giant sequoias. I think it's the redwoods. Their pine cones are basically activated by fire.
Yeah,
crazy.
That's
cool.
Super cool. Mm-hmm. Like dragon eggs.
It's amazing.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a number of plants.
Like dragon eggs.
You wouldn't even think of it, but if you saw like a grapevine and how mm-hmm. thick the bark is on the grapevine, often it needs a fire to get that bark off for it to actually kind of have some renewed growth. Otherwise, it'll kind of be static.
Hmm.
So yeah, it's what we call punctuated equilibrium. Things mostly there's an equilibrium where you can predict day after day how something's going to grow, mm-hmm. but you have punctuated events, whether it's a comet or a volcano or whatever the thing is.
Are you teaching in public school or private?
I am teaching at a university and a college.
Oh, okay. Great.
Yes, yes. Half time at each. So it makes up a full time job together.
So you're a professor. You're a geography professor, not a teacher necessarily.
Yes.
In terms of
professors
the way.
Professors are teachers.
Yes, yeah, but the slang goes, yeah. you say teacher when you mean kids, you say professor when you mean college. I mean.
It's true. I didn't want to get too fancy on you guys.
I understand. So, Dr. Captain.
Uh-oh.
Okay, are you a doctor? You're a doctor.
No, I did not finish my dissertation.
So are you out? Are you out about your, secular humanism, as it were, to your students? Like, do you ever have conflicts of faith? Like, are there students that bring their Christianity to the classroom? I mean,
it depends. Things have changed through time. Like we've talked a lot about the physical geography. Which, there's the topic of evolution or, mm-hmm. say, the age of the Earth, which is a very basic thing when you're looking at everything else physically about the world.
Right.
You can't start off with, this limestone that goes underneath Mount Etna that clearly the process of ash being put down in Mount Etna that has made it the height it is took thousands of years. And then the deposits that are below that of fossils must have been before that rather than some kind of trick or something.
Right. They were put there by Satan.
Satan. Which, if you think about it, that's a real mindfuck. I mean, but anyway. So, physical geography, yes. If we talk about these things, I've had students do papers where, literally they'll use a source that is Minister Bob or whatever.
Oh boy.
And they'll write a paper. And the good thing is I don't really have to come at it in a way of saying, don't bring your religion into this. I come at it as a... Well, we need to talk about what is a good academic source.
Yeah,
and there are peer-reviewed academic journals that I really would prefer you use if you want
to
pass.
Honest
and
to God, I mean, if you really got to go, at least Wikipedia is
peer-reviewed. Have you ever had students that have, complained because they feel that you're discriminating against them because of their religion?
Not anything religious-wise. Mm-hmm. I've had students complain about just weird grade things, but nothing serious. No, I've had students complain to me, but not because of my atheism. And actually, through time, I've found that the studies looking at how more and more secular the younger generation mm-hmm. is have been true. In my own experience, 10 years ago, I had a lot more of these religious papers. I also teach human geography, which we have a couple weeks on religion of the world. Which
sure.
Obviously,
it matters for Linton.
Whatever you believe, it definitely shapes the lives of the people in the different places of the world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you, have you, at these colleges and universities, and you're teaching a lot of science, are you guys finding your funding is about the same? Is it changing? Is it getting cut? I mean, what's the attitude towards science at your schools?
Well, where I am, these are smaller schools,
Right.
And so the funding is really just based on how many students there are. And so it goes up and down depending on things like the economy. If the economy is doing a little bit better, people are working less, taking classes less. So there's slightly less students. So a lot of funding just goes up and down depending on that.
Working less means taking classes less.
Yeah, it does. They say that the best time to go to school is during the Depression.
I would think that people
would be working more and taking classes less.
You can't find work?
Yeah. When you can't find work, you go to school, you take out loans, you educate yourself,
upskill.
You gain skills, mm-hmm. so that when the economy comes back, you're better prepared to find a better job.
That's what I'm confused by him saying people are working less, and so they're taking classes less.
Hmm.
No, the opposite.
Okay. People are working more and taking classes.
Yeah, so for example, right. My map making classes. Mm-hmm. We actually haven't had enough students for enrollments for the past year. But when the recession was at its height, like the class would fill up instantly because students, you wanted to use that as an upskill to try to get a better job, to try to keep their job.
Okay.
To say, oh, I work in this organization and now I can make maps. Okay. I had a bunch of students, for example, who worked for companies that were working on bike lanes, for example.
Hmm.
And they felt, we're going to come in and learn how to make maps of these things. And like, well, yeah, that'll help. Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah.
So that's interesting that your job goes kind of counter to the economy.
Very much.
And that the economy, theoretically, right now is improving, so you probably aren't getting as many students enrolled
in classes.
Well, it
sounds like more of your funding comes from enrollment than anything else, whereas a lot of other colleges, it's grants and things like that. Yeah.
The... if I was at the University of Minnesota, it would be more tied to that type of research and whatnot. But I'm very much, schools I'm at are very much teaching schools. Okay. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So, you said you haven't finished your dissertation. Are you going to do that someday? Or are you pretty much not?
I hope so. You know, it's sad. I've been working so much. Dissertation basically just a big book you write at the end. And I've taken all my classes and passed all my other stuff. But I'm teaching so much and working so much that whenever I kind of start getting to it, something will come up and it's just busy. So maybe.
I'm just going to wait for the economy to take a downturn. Then it'll be time for education.
Did you have a title? Did you have an idea of what you wanted to do?
I did. Not to get too complex, but I used to do a lot of research looking at subprime and predatory lending.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for an organization that's a much demonized Acorn for a number of years.
Sure.
Did a bunch of papers looking at specifically subprime and predatory lending and mortgage fraud in the Twin Cities, just kind of mapping these things compared to things like income and race and different things.
Yeah.
And did a bunch of interviews with people. But really, by the time I kind of had come together, also for my dissertation to put this all together is when everything just kind of exploded already. And a lot of my efforts were about kind of warning people about that this was going to tank the economy and there are going to be a whole bunch of foreclosures. And so when it just kind of happened, a little bit of wind was taken out of my sails.
Absolutely. I can see that.
Yeah. I remember reading you write about a lot of that stuff. It's like, this is going to happen. It's coming. It really is. It's not like there's nobody's going to be the people that are paying attention to this should not be surprised when it takes place. And then it took place. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember Captain writing about that for like the last 2 years or something like that.
Yeah.
you were saying,
yeah,
it's
going
to happen. It's not a question of if, but when.
Yeah.
I used to do lots of presentations at academic conferences and whatnot. And I'd be told that I was just a pessimist and whatnot.
Oh, my.
And that, you know, people didn't need incomes to pay their mortgages and whatnot. So, yeah.
Who cares if you're overhead? You can just default.
Income is silly.
Yeah.
You could wing it.
Yeah. That's how I do most things with money, just winging it.
I just find bags of money laying in the street.
I shake trees and... And then money comes down, and that's an Animal Crossing reference.
Money trees.
And if you got that, we should be friends. That's really interesting. I don't know, did you ever want to teach anything other than geography, or has that always just been your calling?
You know, it's funny. I've always been kind of a spatial thinker, as they say. Mm-hmm. You could kind of tell this by sometimes how you organize things. If you, for example, perhaps organize your movies alphabetically and are kind of obsessed with that.
He's pointing at me right now.
Or
he doesn't need to.
If you think about your home and where things are and you know them spatially, well, I know this thing is over here and I know this thing is over there rather than filing them alphabetically.
That's me big time.
That is spatial thinking. And so maybe you, like myself, find maps a good way to very quickly tell you what's going down in a situation, where you are, where everyone else is.
I'm a big fan of maps and directories.
Maps throw me off balance. I'm not good at maps.
You are, no. So, if right now Molly were to say, hey, I left my keys at home, I don't know where they are, there's a pretty good chance that I remember where her keys are. Mm. Just because part of that spatial thinking, I know where all the things are in our house. How? I just remember where they are.
I'm the same way with my wife. Whenever she loses something, I'm always the one who finds it. Because I know, well, it'll be in this spot or this spot or this spot, and I will go to those spots. And if it's not, then I'm kind of lost. I'm like, well, it's not in these spots that it would be in. So I don't,
It's not in these places where I saw you do things and I saw you might have set it down. I don't have enough knowledge. Or,
well, I can do that at least, but it's like, for me, most specifically with maps, I have a hard time. Okay, so in order for me to remember directions, I literally, this is so embarrassing, I literally have to picture the United States, like a map, and I have to think Minnesota, Florida, California, Maine. That's how I think of whether things are east, west. Like, so if I'm thinking like, okay, if I'm on the highway and I know I'm going south and I need to figure out, I don't know if I need to go east or west, because it'll just say, or I'll say go east and I can't figure out if I need to turn left or right. I'll think, okay, I'm facing Minnesota and it says go east, so I need to turn toward Maine, so I need to turn right. That's just how, that's the only way I can do it. It's awesome. So ridiculous.
That
it's,
is horribly embarrassing.
It takes so long.
I had the hardest time. Even now, left and right screws me up. When I was a kid, I sucked my thumb until I was 13, and it was my right thumb. And so I would remember the right based on which thumb I sucked.
Oh, I would do the
push. That was the right ones.
All the L's.
To put in your mouth. That,
no, to me, it's just like, which thumb did I stick
in? I just figured it out. I never needed a mnemonic for something that's fairly binary.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you would think, and it's kind of embarrassing sometimes.
Yeah, no, I understand.
We have a friend that she's an Omegacon goer too that has huge problems with the rights and lefts even to this day.
She can hold out her two hands, and the L's thing doesn't make any sense to her.
Because if it's an L, you flip it the other way, and
like if you go like this, that's your. Which she can't remember which way to do it.
Has she thought of a tattoo?
I like that idea. I would do that.
I mean, I would if I was, you know, if that was still a day-to-day problem.
If it was a critical problem as an adult, I would consider a tattoo on the wrist, her hand as a reminder.
Yeah, a little memento, have your whole story written on you, and you know.
Yeah. Well, you can get a compass rose tattooed on your hand. That way you don't need to think Minnesota, Texas, Maine, and California.
Texas. I have no idea. Texas doesn't Florida, help me at all.
Sorry.
No, California.
So you can think.
Maine, not New York. Most people
Maine,
think
New
York.
York.
That's Maine is the farthest east.
No, because she's a Stephen King nerd.
That too, but also Maine is the one I think about. Think about Maine a lot.
It's Stephen King related.
Oh, I would live in Maine.
Not sure if
they
I completely answered your earlier question, but actually I get a lot less students who write religious-themed papers. I used to get a lot of them, and I don't know if it's that, you know, like I said, religion is decreasing the students or if they're just better students. I mean, that was one of the things. One of my worries at the beginning was, you know, if a student has this paper that's very religious, I don't want to mark it down because of that, obviously. I want to mark it down because it's not academically sound.
Right.
And so I would try to be try to look at it from as much of a distance as possible. But I'd find out time and time again that students who would use, you know, their local pastor as a source would also be failing quizzes and all these other things, too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was always a learning opportunity, and you know, and I have, like I said, in my human geography class, which is about cultures around the world, we have a big section which is about religions, and I don't really talk about Christianity because it's like, well, you should know something about that, obviously,
right? It's kind of the dominant religion in our culture.
Exactly. And like, you know, I was in India last March, and so I usually do a lot about the caste system and things like that. And you know, I've been to China and Latin America and Europe and all over the place, and so I show all these different examples. I've been to Egypt, for example, so I show them ancient religions that have all died out.
Yeah.
Which I think gives them a lot of perspective, but a lot of them are just increasingly secular. One of our assignments, one of the maps in our book is just a map of the United States, and there was a survey asking people, how much of a role does religion play in your life? And, you know, it follows the trend you would predict. The Bible Belt,
right.
Right.
Is more, and our states are less. And one of the questions I always ask them are, well, if you're looking at all the states, what states do you think are you more or less religious than the average or what? And again, and these are very mixed students. I have lots of Hmong and Somali and lots of different ethnicities, but they all basically say that their parents are very religious, but they are not. Again,
interesting.
So there's a big change coming into America.
That would
That's
be
really
great.
Cool.
When you're looking at religions in other countries, when you're going to other countries, I mean, to me, religion is so pervasive in America, you can't avoid it. Do you find that that's the same in other countries?
It depends. You know, if you go to Europe, religion is almost a tourist afterthought in many ways. You know,
well, you know, visiting churches is cool. They're pretty.
Well, the cathedrals in Europe, I mean, you know, they took generations to make, right? It's like just about anything that took a lot of work to produce? Or
many Bothans died to give us
that. Yeah. Oops.
So it depends, though. You know, people in Europe are usually much more secular. People in Asia tend to be more secular. East Asia, South Asia, India, people are quite religious. And there's just a ton of different religions that have very different philosophies and whatnot. I mean, literally, Hinduism itself has over 200 million gods in their belief system. And it's almost similar to what you call an animist religion, which is where, you know, well, this tree is one god. And
like the Hmong, their religion is animist. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, one of my favorite things about the idea of, you know, geography and evolution is the actual evolution of the continents themselves. Mm-hmm. Because in a way, I mean, the way that the continental drift, happened, the tectonic shifting, do you guys talk a lot about that? And what do... Do you have any students that, I mean, just like, what are their general thoughts on that? Because I know when I went to college, I had some people that there was still a lot of like almost racism around in the classrooms. And I know when you get a mix of students from, you know, Somali and Hmong and all these different cultures that have not grown up being taught necessarily to tolerate one another. I mean, is there any kind of weirdness like when they talk about the way they see the world?
Sometimes, especially at the beginning, to differentiate in the cultural geography, when I was a teaching assistant at the University of Minnesota, some of the papers that I would get would just be horrific. Just, you know, saying people of other races just were literally, you know, genetically inferior, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I get horrible stuff.
Wow.
Well, and again, the sad thing is they would do research and there's been enough vague sciencey publications in that area that they would have like arguments if you would mark them down and whatnot. That was really tough. But I've found that teaching at schools that are much less expensive, perhaps less elite, you know, they're often also less educated, but I've also found a lot less of that racism or classism or various isms. And I don't know why exactly that is, that they're a little bit more open. Of course, it goes through time as well. But yeah, I'm not sure why that is. Oh, but as far as looking at the continents moving apart, it's one of those things where sometimes at the beginning of a physical geography class, a student will say, they just can't comprehend billions of years of time.
Yeah.
And it's a continent.
It's really hard to wrap your head around that kind of time.
But if you look at like, you look at the changes and how things have shifted and everything since, like, you know, Pangaea or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the future projections, how they're pretty sure the plates are going to shift and how the continents are going to move around and stuff. And I remember looking at that stuff in school and having, you know, other students my age be like, oh, that's going to be so cool. Like, I can't wait to see that.
No, funny.
And
you cannot wait, and then
it's even when confronted about it they would say like well just imagine like what it's going to be like then for people, and sometimes it's just like, if there are people, man, I mean like a billion years from now is not even that super long in geologic terms.
No, it's just, you know, this is just a small amount of time we're in. But when we talk about huge range of time, which is difficult for even educated people to contemplate.
But I imagine in some other cultures they haven't really even learned about it from a smaller age it's even harder to grasp, I bet.
So the interesting thing is, you know, the students I get, although they're from other cultures, they've been in the U.S. for at least a good 10 years.
Okay, yeah.
And they're 18, 19, 20, so they really are much more American at this point.
Yeah,
they're just like, I mean, that's kind of the funny thing.
I wasn't sure like how recent of immigrants they were, if they, you know.
I get some more recent immigrants, but mostly I get second generation or whatnot.
Sure.
And it's interesting because when I, you know, first started teaching at these different schools, I thought, oh, this is so great and so diverse, and they're going to have such these great perspectives on politics in Asia and stuff. But they're just so American. They don't know languages anymore. They're just people.
It's basically one generation.
My high school, I went to Minneapolis Public School. Oh. My high school had a, and I wasn't in the magnet in the, I was in the general program, so the magnet was very white.
Hmm.
But in the general ed, there's a really large Hmong and Vietnamese population and a lot of Somali kids. And so, and as you know, there are a lot of cultural differences or whatever, mostly in how they relate to their family, because it seems like that's the people that have the tradition that matters more to than the teenagers. And I mean, differences, sure, but man, all teenagers. And those similarities of the age.
Age almost like a cast. Well,
peer group is more
spread
important.
Throughout. Yeah. Those are way more stronger traits or stronger behaviors than culture. It's
absolutely.
Just the fact that they're teenagers.
Anything I've ever seen looking at generational theory, it's your peers that you care about. It's people your own age and how they're looking at the world. Your parents, you care until you're like 12, and then you basically want to do the opposite often, right?
Maybe you care in your professional life about the generation before you for a while, but you get to a certain point where you start to realize that the generation before you is not up to speed, especially when it comes to technology, or just with current politics or things.
Well, and going back to religious beliefs, a lot of, for example, Hmong students, for example, they will reject these past superstitions and whatnot because they find them very limiting. Mm-hmm. For example, the belief that the parents can't be taken to the afterlife, which is in the mountains in Asia, unless they have a male child. That's one of those things where the family, if they don't have a male child, the girls are just kind of like, you know what? I think that thinking sucks.
Yeah,
so
that
I'm just
seems awful.
Moving on from that. And there's tons of that. If you ever read any, there's a really good book called The Late Homecomer. But there's a number of different books looking at the Hmong immigrants to Minnesota. And
interesting.
The huge amounts of beliefs that they had beforehand. I mean, the tapestry of religion, we're used to this kind of very kind of simple model in the U.S. where it's like, oh, you have your God and your religion. But religions where the rest of the world are so complex. When I was in India, the tapestry of the different castes and how that is your occupation and your life.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't surprising that people who are on the lower parts of the caste are no longer Hindus and that's what most different offshoots of religion in India were, people who were put on
like,
the bottom.
Fuck this system. This system failed me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Where's your God now?
The Dalits, otherwise known as the Untouchables, for example, none of them are Hindus. They're just like, we're not, no.
Yeah, why would we be?
But it's one of those things where if the rest of society culturally considers you that. And these castes are different enough that they're basically ethnicities, so they could tell each other. And so if the rest of society decides you're untouchable and you're dirty, you could have a branch off religion and whatnot, but it kind of, you're still in that structure.
Yeah.
Societally.
Everything's working to
culturally,
to put you
you're
there.
Still untouchable, even if you're like, but I'm not a Hindu, so
It's just like, we can reject Christianity all we want, but as far as they're concerned, we are committing the ultimate sin, and it doesn't matter that we say, we're not, because your sins don't exist.
Yeah.
Or, as atheists, we can be atheists in the United States and not believe or whatever, but, despite, underpinnings in our nation's founding, United States of America is still pretty much a Christian country.
Absolutely. Well, that was really great. Thank you for talking to us. We have 5 questions. I don't know if you want to answer our 5 questions.
Of course.
I would hope so, because you're going to have
to.
Yeah, you have a choice.
All right, so
that
would
have been really awkward.
Tim, why don't you hit him with the first question?
I will hit you with the first question. What's the best movie you have seen in the last 30 days?
The last 30 days...
Did you see Thor 2? Did you see Thor?
I did not.
Oh, see, so you can't say Thor.
I hear people enthused about it, though.
I saw Thor today, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
We're not asking you, Tim.
Yeah. But I'm just bringing that up to give him time to think.
Right? Okay. Was it better than Thor 1?
I got to watch it again.
I heard some people say
that as a no.
Yeah, no. Maybe on par.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. Anyway.
So. I already forgot the question. Oh, yeah. So, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the New York documentary series. It's technically a documentary movie, although it's 20 hours.
No.
Wow.
It's excellent. It's on like Amazon streaming and different places like that. I highly recommend it. It looks at the evolution of New York from, about 1500 through 2001. The last episode is all about the Twin Towers.
Oh, wow.
Excellent.
Wow.
And it's a great series because it shows not just the kind of simplistic things of architecture and whatnot, but, what were the cultural things going on? It talks about the racism and the Native Americans who were there at first, and then it goes off into, the 1970s, and the kind of urban blight, and why did this happen, and who's responsible, and what do people do to fight it, and it's really good. Ken Burns.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, he's pretty awesome. Much, yeah.
20 hours. It's worth
it,
though.
A lot, but
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What our second question is, who is your favorite atheist character?
You know, I've thought long and hard about that question, and I was thinking about what first kind of made me feel that other people might be atheists, because I've been atheist since I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, ever since it was like, there's no Santa Claus, there's no God.
Yeah.
Easter Bunny, I don't know.
Yeah. Easter Bunny, there's evidence. You got evidence of that. I mean,
exactly.
Plus, bunnies are real, so.
Yeah, that's I mean, who's to say it's not a bunny that's leaving candy?
Yeah, and that bunny died on the cross for your sins. Oh, so I was thinking back, and it was a tie between Doctor Who, which Tom Baker, Doctor Who, was very mm-hmm. much a scientific-y guy. Sure. But actually, strangely enough, what was more compelling was the professor from Gilligan's Island.
Huh. Oh.
Yeah.
So not like atheist-specific, but definitely science-minded and not really bothering with any hooey.
The professor, if you don't recall, which I wouldn't blame you for not recalling, but the professor, anytime there's something supernatural on it,
mm-hmm.
even if the supernatural thing was in fact, according to the narrative, true, so for example, they met a vampire.
Right,
that was a real vampire, but the professor would always relentlessly say, there is a natural, actual explanation for these events.
Yeah.
And I strangely enough remember thinking in one episode, for example, where there was some tribe who put a hex on people for different things, and the professor was very adamant saying, telling Gilligan, you know, hexes do not work, Gilligan. This is all in your mind. And they put a hex on the professor, which froze him in place for a day in mid-sentence. And then when he unfroze, he still was saying there is a rational explanation. And, of course, it's one of those things like on Bones mm-hmm. where the audience is kind of laughing at the atheist and, ha-ha, don't we know better? But when I was watching it as a kid, even though the narrative was clearly saying, hey, these supernatural things happen because otherwise we wouldn't have this comedy plot line, I would watch it as a kid and say, you know, the professor, I think, is right in the long term.
That's awesome.
Who are you going to believe? The skinny jackass who can't, stay in a hammock?
Yep.
Or a guy who can turn coconuts into transistor radios?
Exactly. We all know what happened to the professor. I mean, with the hex, you know, somebody like shot a poison dart at him that froze him in place.
Romeo and Juliet style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. He's right. There's always a scientific explanation.
Yep. But even the episode where there was a vampire bat, he had explanations for why, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the third question is, what is your geekiest hobby? And by that we mean, what's a hobby that you have to like kind of confess to other geeks and they're like, boy, that's pretty geeky. That's a geeky thing you do.
You know, that's a really tough one because just about any really geeky thing that I do, I can actually rationalize it as it not being a hobby, but it's somehow having to do with teaching science.
Sure.
So I actually talked to my wife about this, and she said, well, you have to tell them about your Game of Thrones obsession. So I don't know if you guys know of Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Molly and I have read them all. And
Nick and I are all about.
We've heard of Game of Thrones.
Guys are geeks, you know.
We own the Marvel comics, the egg and
I work for a company that
Dunkin' Egg. Games.
Dunkin' Egg.
Dunkin'.
We haven't read the stories, but the Dunkin' Egg stories that got turned into comics we own.
Interesting.
I read them.
They're great. You read the Dunkin' Egg short stories from the collected works?
Oh no.
Yeah.
They're great. They're very short. Oh yeah. But that's not alone the geeky thing. It's that I bought the HBO episodes and then put them on my computer and then edited them for a PG-13 rating. So when I babysat my nephews, I could have a marathon because we had marathons, the Lord of the Rings when they were younger and things like that.
Yeah.
And they loved it. And for a number of years, I was kind of like, you know, Game of Thrones, if it just didn't have these couple of scenes, because all their parents are rather conservative.
Well, and, you know, boobs and beheadings, like, it just,
Well, surprisingly enough, all you have to do is zoom in slightly on a scene here and there. And literally, even though the show is infamous for having sex position, having sex and telling you the plot.
Yeah.
As I went through the series a second time, making sure to see, okay, what are they saying during sex? And seeing if that mattered. It didn't. I was very surprised because they're famous for it. But I would look through it and I would say, they repeated that same thing that they said during sex.
Because I mean, who's paying attention while the sex is happening?
I was.
But
how much screen time ends up getting taken out?
This is the other thing. People assume, they're like, oh, you got out half of it. I was very surprised. Some episodes, just a couple minutes. Some episodes, like the most was something like 7 minutes off of an episode.
Oh, wow.
Because like I said, mostly what I will do is I'll try to zoom in or something because there's some scenes that have good dialogue. Like Dan Reese has lots of dialogue, but she's standing there naked. And if you get a high resolution copy, though, you just zoom in a little bit.
Just because Theon is balls deep in some prostitute doesn't mean what he's saying doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I haven't quite gotten to the some interesting Theon episodes that come in season 3.
Yeah,
but that might cut a good hunk out.
Because there's like necessary torture.
Yeah.
Well, but at the same time, I think some of it's a bit overdone. So, like I said, I haven't quite gotten there. I went through 2.5 seasons with them, and that's how much I've edited. And so the next time I babysit, we'll do another season and a half after they do the next season.
That's awesome. That's great. That's super impressive.
Okay, so question number 4. What is your favorite sandwich? Please be specific.
I'm so hungry.
The sad thing is I don't actually really like sandwiches.
Get out of this room. No, I'm just kidding.
I actually mentioned this to my wife who loves sandwiches, and she said... she said that the only sandwiches I like are Arby's sandwiches, which I wasn't sure if they count as sandwiches.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's roast beef on a bun.
If there's bread and meat, it's a sandwich, yeah.
All right. And the only reason I like that is when I was 14, I got my first job at Arby's and used to be a big part of, my wage was eating all the food I could eat.
Yeah.
Have you ever eaten at Mavericks?
No.
You would like Mavericks.
Mavericks is like Arby's with real food.
Yeah, we go to Mavericks for work stuff sometimes.
It's really good.
It's yummy.
It's roast beef sandwiches, just like Arby's, au jus, but
greasier, like more of a cafeteria deli kind of place.
I can't recommend it. Roseville. If you like Arby's, I cannot recommend Mavericks high enough.
Mavericks.
Our last question number 5, is... what's the stupidest thing anyone's ever said to you or comment you've heard about your atheism?
For this, I would have to go back to junior high. When I was young, a lot of my friends growing up in my neighborhood all went to a specific Catholic school.
Mm.
And so they, at a young age, when a lot of kids don't really kind of argue their beliefs out, they just kind of go with what they've been told. And I had a really good friend... and, you know, it's kind of interesting. This connects to an earlier podcast you guys had. Because I had read about... I was a big Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
And I had read about Roddenberry being a humanist, for example.
Yeah.
Sure.
And for a while, my teens actually joined the local humanist organization the same time Scott Lohman joined.
Oh, all right.
Years ago. Yeah. We're talking like 20 years ago or something.
Friend of the show, Scott Lohman.
Friend of the show, Scott.
Very good guy. I think he's now president of their...
Yeah.
He is.
There was a great guy named Erickson who was president at the time, and it was mostly a retired person's group way back when. And they were very actually frightful of the organization dying out.
Yeah.
And so they're happy to have some young people. But anyway, so way back then, I remember reading about it, and this was before the internet, so it was actually tough to kind of find information about it, but they had... a weekly mailer that you could sign up for and pay a fee, and I did as a kid, and I would get it and I would kind of read through it and I'd be like, oh, humanism, this sounds really interesting. And one of my friends that I would talked about this with, and he didn't know what to make of it, but he knew it was wrong and he didn't like it. And then he came back after some time and he said, well, I talked to... And again, I think it was like Minister Bob or something like that.
Pastor Bob.
And he said, you know, and that group, the atheists and atheism, is a dangerous cult. And at the time, this is again before the internet. And I thought to myself, cult. How is atheism a cult? How does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I said, do you have a dictionary? Can we go to that dictionary together and look? And we look it up. And cult, sure enough, says something like a system of religious beliefs and practices. And I said... How is atheism that is not a religion, how is that a... And it was one of those things where I was doubting my own interpretation of things. I was like, he has to be right somehow. Well, let's look up what religion is. And again, that's supernatural. And I'm like, how are humanists or atheists a cult or a religion that just doesn't... How does that work?
Why is a religious guy saying that?
And that was only annoying because... it was such a big argument, especially when I was a kid.
Well, yeah, that's kind of
and there was no things to look up, like the internet.
The problem is you look it up and you go, wow, these definitions don't jive with what you just said. And the person who says it would never go, oh, you know, I guess you're right. I really characterized
it
incorrectly.
It's almost like Christians have their own definitions for things that are totally subjective.
Yeah. I mean, and it's weird, but in many ways, like, I lost a number of friends when I was that young because, just literally because they were, you know, it's interesting because they didn't do anything especially religious, but going to religious school and just having that be, like, you know, I'd go to their house and there'd be crucifixes all over and stuff, and that was just...
You drift apart.
Well, when you're a kid, some kids... Their parents tell them something, they say, this is the way the world is, and the kid takes it as, to use the phrase, takes it as gospel.
They usually do.
And it's, so it's like, you know, of course my dad can beat up your dad. Have you seen my dad? He's enormous. But every kid's dad is enormous to them as a kid. So it's like, well, my dad says that, you know, this happens. Yeah. My dad takes me to church where they tell me these things.
Well, and you're upsetting the balance.
Are you saying my dad is wrong and everything I've been told is wrong?
That is often something that would be said, actually. Yeah. It's common to say, are you saying my dad is wrong? Are you saying my mom is wrong? And I would say, yeah. Are you calling them liars? Are you saying they're stupid? No, but yes, but no.
Yeah, yes, I am, but not to your face. Well, I was going to say, thank you, Cap. I mean, that's really great. This has been the captain here.
Yeah, at OmegaCon.
Yeah, at OmegaCon. Yeah. Once again, live studio audience.
Yay!
Yeah. Thanks,
one of them's asleep.
All right, well, you know, we had a really good time talking to you. Thank you for sharing your
talk
about everything.
Thanks for popping on.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is our last recording at OmegaCon for this year, guys. But tune in next time. We'll see you soon. Always every Tuesday.
Bye.
Thanks to Melissa Kerscher for our totally sweet logo.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts on geekswithoutgod.com, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
The deaths of St. Paul. Yeah. Who gets caught there at night?
Right, Tim? Jesus.